Hello, hello, hello.
We still have not found a way to introduce our podcast better than that.
I've actually got a really good idea for an introduction.
Nobody wants to hear your drum solo.
No, it's not going to be a drum solo.
Or your guitar solo. Harmonica, maybe.
I'll talk to you guys about it. I probably should have talked to you about this before the show started, so maybe we could actually do it today. But I guess we'll just leave everyone in suspense. Anyways.
I said we just do it in three different languages. That way other people feel like we're there.
Hello.
We are.
Hola. Oh.
Eh.
Come on.
I don't know other languages.
Give me something, Daniel.
Bonjour.
All right. Well, anyways, thanks for tuning in today. This is Section 119, where we're going to be talking all things Aggies every week. I am Jaden Johnson. I'm joined here by a couple of fine gentlemen with beards.
Daniel Hansen.
Trevor Porath.
And it is No Shave November, for those of you who haven't set your clocks back.
But Jaden still doesn't have the beard, so it's still just two beards here.
I may be growing a neard this November. No Shave November for neards.
Two beards and a peach fuzz.
Anyways, I'm getting there. Today we've got a pretty sweet show. As good as it can be after a nasty Aggie loss like that, one that we took at Wyoming. So we'll talk a little bit about that, kind of give our state of the program address, since, I mean, everybody's all political this
week.
We're
in a presidential mood.
Everyone's, I mean, as we're recording this, it's Tuesday night, and so all this political crap is going down. And
so we're sorry that we're making you think about it again after it's over. But it's a good topic.
Yeah. So we're gonna give our state of the program address tonight, where we just figure out what is wrong with Utah State football, or at least pretend to come up with some explanations. We're also gonna talk about basketball. We coming fresh off of our very first exhibition, which might not have meant much, but it was enough to get me excited for the season. And we'll go over our Aggie calendar, talk about what's going on in the other smaller sports as well. But
we got to start with football.
Yeah, we got to start with football. Get it out of the way.
And, well, we kind of figure you guys don't really like – well, not like, but we don't know much more than you guys do. So us previewing our game or our loss with New Mexico, depending on your optimism – isn't going to mean a ton. So we actually figured, let's just kind of talk about where we think Aggie football is headed, because right now that's kind of the big part of this season.
Are we headed another Brent Guy era?
Yeah, pretty much. Aggie Twitter right now is it a dark age beginning, or I don't know what the other side of that would be called, the sunlight or something.
A new great awakening.
A new hope. We're pretty much
third coming.
Like, we're like
of Aggie football.
We're on like separate sides of the Star Wars episodes, pretty much.
Yeah. This is the $1 million question. What is wrong with this football team? There's clearly something. I was discussing with you two guys yesterday. I feel like this year, we have as talented of a squad, and I've said this on the podcast as well, I feel like we have as talented of a squad as we've had any time in the past decade. Do you guys agree with that?
I can agree with that.
I mean, it's obvious. I mean, we've been recruiting better now than we ever have possibly in the history of Aggie sports, say maybe like the 60s.
I'll say maybe last year we could have had a more talented squad. I mean, losing guys like Nick Vigil, Kyler Fackrell, that hurts. We lost a lot of star power over the off season, but this is a very talented team. So why are we struggling so bad? It's got to be more than just football reasons, in my eyes.
You know, I've heard rumors about that from people, and I've heard going on both sides of that. You know, I've seen stuff on Twitter from, you know, people that seem to know a lot of stuff about inside stuff in the program, that there is, player coach fighting or not getting along. And I've also seen where their player coaches are, you know, perfectly fine, still buddy-buddy.
Yeah, I think the one thing with that, I mean, this season really shows to us, I think, how hard it is to actually win in football.
No question.
Because, I mean, I think we're one of the most talented teams in the Mountain West. I mean, you look at the people we've got on the roster. I mean, especially when we're healthy. I mean, Devontae Mays is one of the best running backs. We have a good wide receivers core that's proven themselves this year. Defensively, we don't lack. I don't think we have a ton of playmakers besides maybe Lovett. But, I mean, we still have a lot of talent on this roster, but it just hasn't clicked. It just hasn't happened pretty much since the middle of last season. And so, like you're saying, I mean, it's not just the football thing. It might be those friction in the locker room problems maybe, but, I mean.
Well, and here's the thing is speculation is all that we have right now, I think, to justify this season. It just makes no sense that a team could go from being one of the top teams in the Mountain West and then last year even going and destroying Boise State and then just all of a sudden we're cellar dwellers. All of a sudden we're probably, you know, the 100th best team in the country. Like,
well, yeah, we're like four and ten now or something since the Boise State game. And like I've mentioned this to you guys before. I mean, it makes no sense to me how we've come at this spot, because I mean, we did do well. We've been bashing on Matt Wells the past couple weeks for his obviously poor coaching efforts, but I mean, we didn't see those at least to this magnitude before the Boise State game. There were some games you could argue, I mean, we were all pretty excited when we were able to keep him when he wasn't hired away by some other school. We were pretty happy when that happened. And now, yeah, all of a sudden we're like, please, somebody else take him from us. Like,
I literally remember having conversations with my uncle, who's a lifelong Aggie fan, big supporter of the program. I remember having conversations with him that went where he was saying maybe we should only win 7 or 8 games a year so that Matt Wells doesn't look attractive to other programs and we can just continue to at least be relevant. And he was at the point where he would literally rather do that. Now it's like, I mean, I'm not going to say that this is my opinion, but much of the Aggie fan base is like, get this guy out the door. So how does I just can't, like, I have such a hard time wrapping my mind around and figuring out how such a colossal change could happen in, we'll say, 10 games, you know? What was it, 10 games between now and the Boise game?
I think
it's
been 14.
14 games?
Still not a long time.
I
think there's a couple things you can go from here. I mean, one, you could just place a lot of the blame on Matt Wells himself, and I think he does deserve a lot of the blame. Some of the game plans we've seen aren't that great. We hardly ever see adjustments in-game. I mean, this last game against
Wyoming
was probably the first time we've ever come out of halftime with some fire.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
but like Trevor was saying earlier, I mean, do the players not want to play for him anymore? Does the Torrey Greene situation, the JoJo Natson situation, the Tyrone Mosley situation, do those all just like compound all the problems within the locker room to make it so that they really just don't want to play for each other, let alone the coaching staff?
And you know, we discussed this as well, and that's such a touchy area of talk because we don't know anything. You know, we don't know if things with Torrey Greene and with Tyshawn Mosley and other players that have had problems, we don't know if those were taken care of properly, and they could have been. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I think that everything was handled in the wrong way. But that is a very easy explanation to fall on. If things were handled the wrong way, that's such an easy way to explain the decline of the team, because that would absolutely cause something like we've had.
You know, if it's not with them, you know, maybe just after it has nothing to do with the coach, and just after that Colorado State loss, they just kind of they got all their, you know, mojo that they had for themselves that, you know, said they were good. And it kind of just popped their bubble on it. And because now, you know, like we sit in front row of Section 119 for every home game. And you guys, we talked about this yesterday, how we would see some of the guys, you know, a couple would come in emotional, like they're getting mad at that they're losing. And there's some of them that just go over there, the receivers and the running backs just go plop their butts on the bench and put their arms up and just slick back and wait to go back on for after the defense is on there for 5 or 10 minutes.
Whatever. Those problems are also from last year too. I mean, mm-hmm. kind of looking at it, Boise State pretty much handed us that game by giving us like 8 turnovers or whatever it was. I mean, the game was over before halftime. Not entirely because we were great, but because Boise State just made a lot of bad decisions. Without that game, or if that game was a loss like it possibly should have been, then, I mean, we're 5-8 last year, or 5-7 because we probably may have not even been to that bowl game. So, I mean, these problems are probably 2 years straight. I don't remember seeing a lot of fire outside of David Mwala last year, really, even on the team. I mean,
yeah, whatever is causing the decline, that's what's in question. But to me, there's no question that there is much, much less energy, much less emotion for the team this year and last year as well, but especially this year. As somebody who's, you know, as Trevor was saying, I've been on the front row for every game for the last 2 years and many before that as well, but every game for the last 2 years, and sitting right behind the bench, you can see when players are pumped up, when players are cheering for the defense, you know, say the defense is out and the offense is just sitting back and kind of waiting for their turn. There's a big difference in emotion. And this year, there's a couple of individual players will come over and just be mad, just be throwing stuff and Austin cursing. Stevens. And I love that fire, but it's just a couple of guys and everybody else, it looks like they're just waiting for their sandwich at Subway, sitting around on the bench with no conversation about what went wrong on the last drive or what they're going to do differently on the next drive or anything.
Well, I mentioned to you guys too, like after the San Diego State game, the entire game was a slogfest in the rain. Players should have been tired. They should have been cold. They should have been just wiped out from the game. But you go on to Kent Meyer's Snapchat, you see him partying up with a bunch of high schoolers at Castle Manor, which is just a Halloween party that was after the game at like 2 a.m.
According to Jake, there was only like 10 high schoolers there.
Yeah, still. Yeah. I mean, it's Castle Manor.
But that is Jake. He's still not very reliable.
Jake is a high schooler. That you guys don't know him, but whatever. So, I mean, there's obviously like a disconnect, I guess, with the game and some of the players, I think, on how like serious it is. I'm not going to really go into that, whether I think that's right or wrong, because, I mean, those players still do give a lot of time, but it's also kind of frustrating when you see us losing, you see us having hard times, you see people like Austin Stevens going nuts on the sideline, but then you see other players that are just like, eh, let's go party. Who cares that we lost?
And there's certainly a lack of camaraderie, I think. There's not, I mean, of course I haven't been in the locker room and seen what goes on there, and so maybe these guys are tighter than it seems, but on the sidelines, they're just, you know, it's just a bunch of guys that seem like they've never even met each other that were just thrown out to play with each other in an all-star game or something, you know? Like, there's not a sense of team.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I put a lot of, I guess, credit into the theory of the Natson incidents, the Mosley, and, of course, Torrey Greene. Kind of, it seems almost like a flip was just switched. Like, we all of a sudden are like, we went 10-4, I think 9-4 last 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then since that, we're, I think, 9-14 or something like that. It's not a really good mark. And it just makes no sense that we still have, like, talented players like that, but the product is just not similar. And I think the only thing I think really can flip that switch that drastically, I think, would be something like the Tyron Mosley's and the Torrey Greene kind of splintering the team apart a bit.
One thing I was just thinking of is, you know, maybe this switch kind of did start at the beginning of last season or in spring ball before that, when, you know, Coach Wells decides he's going to go back with Chucky. And so Daryl Gerritsen thinks, well, guess what, if you're going to do that, because I played great last year, so I'm just going to transfer. And before Gerritsen did transfer, Kent Myers was in a wide receiver position because he could play. And so, you know, it could be this Wells just going with, you know, with loyalty instead of who should be out there. And then, you know, so making all these people mad down the line. And, you know, we could be getting some of that now, you know, because there was a tweet by one of the players on Twitter that said he's done being patient.
And that was Damian Hobbs too.
And so, you know, that he doesn't necessarily say it's about quote-unquote football, but, you know, his only other tweet that he tweeted out before within the last 2 months was about football.
To me, I feel that right or wrong, and there's certainly a case that could be made that Matt Wells has done his job and the players are the ones that are the problem here. You know, I don't know where I stand on that, but that's certainly a possibility. Right or wrong, I feel like there is a disconnect between Matt Wells and the players. And whatever that's caused by, who knows? I don't know if it's something that could be fixed. I don't know if it's something that waited out and we'll get back to our winning ways. I'm not to the point where I think Matt Wells needs to be gone. You know, I'm not like fire him in the middle of the season. A few reasons, money's a big one. But I think keep him to the end of the season. If we lose all the rest of our games, that might need to happen. I'll see how I feel at that point. With money, though, I think we got to keep him around at least another year, and maybe that's what we need.
Yeah, the money thing makes it really complicated because, I mean, if we do let him go, even after the season, we're still going to be on the hook for him for, like, a total of, like, $800,000, I think, over the next 2 years, which for Utah State is a big amount of money. If it was solely just on his job performance, I think, yeah, he kind of has to be gone. But it's also, I mean, it's just so hard to, like, think. It kind of goes back to what we were saying, that, I mean, how did we go just this quickly from Matt Wells being like, I don't want anybody else taking him, like, how, like, he's this great coach, to all of a sudden, like, he can't even make a proper play call. Like, it just is really strange to me. Like, does he not even trust the players? That's the other thing, I think. I mean, that's part of the reason I kind of think that Matt Wells may not be the entire problem here, is because I don't think he really trusts his quarterbacks, whether it's Ken Myers or Damian Hobbs in this last game, or even last year maybe with or the last couple of years with Garrettson. I'm not sure he really fully trusts his quarterback, which I kind of trust because you're putting your job pretty much on the line with that quarterback, whoever you put in there. But it's also, I mean, at the same time, he has to open up the offense, and he has to understand Ken Myers has been in this system 3 years and knows the playbook pretty well.
Well, I mean, Matt Wells is a quarterback himself. And I think that he coaches a lot of times from a quarterback's perspective rather than from a coach's who should be coaching a quarterback's perspective, if that makes any sense. I think that he makes decisions the way that he would have wanted them to be made while he was a quarterback. Part of that is being loyal to those quarterbacks. And, you know, I understand that. But I think he needs to take a bit of a step back and be a little more of a coach when it comes especially to the quarterback position. Not just that, but to other positions as well.
Yeah, he was a great quarterback. He was a great quarterback's coach. Look who he did with Chucky Keaton his freshman year.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly
part of the thing that also baffles me, is I think one of the big problems is we're not developing players as well as we did with Gary Anderson.
No question
there. I mean, you look at, first of all, the people coming in. I mean, granted, recruiting rankings aren't perfect and they make mistakes. But, I mean, we were able to mold, like, Nevin Lawson, Bobby Wagner, Robert Turbin, all these guys, we were able to build them into bona fide NFL players.
Vigil brothers.
I mean, but I mean, even with like Nick Vigil, I mean, the last couple of years, we kind of were waiting for him to be like this dominant force. And while he put up good stat lines and stuff, I never really felt like Vigil and Fackrell were like these dominant players that like would just take over the games. Like I kind of felt like Bobby Wagner would sometimes do, or Robert Turbin would do. And I don't know if that's definitely not something you can place entirely on Matt Wells.
Because Wagner and Turbin were there, that they were the only two on the team.
Well,
Smith, there was Michael Smith too, but.
But I mean, I just don't see like that development happening. Like Kent Myers, we can arguably say is kind of the same quarterback he was his freshman year. I mean, we still see the same things every single time he touches the ball from Kennedy Williams. Like, it kind of makes me sad with the coaching staff because, like, I think right now, like, Rashad Lewis is tremendous and all the other freshmen we have on the team. But can they actually develop?
I want to pose this question just before we move on from Aggie football. So next year, there's no question every game at the stadium besides BYU and Boise State, there's going to be maybe 6,000-7,000 people there. It's going to be – there's not going to be hardly any excitement for the season. I mean, this is all assuming there aren't major offseason changes like a coaching change or anything. I think there's just going to be very, very little excitement for the season, very few people in the stands. What do you feel – do you feel it's possible, and what – like, what would it take – for this team to be back as a relevant Mountain West team next year? Is that a possibility? Like a, we'll say like an 8 or 9 win team next year.
I think it's possible. I mean, I think, first of all, we need help from other teams in the Mountain West. I mean, you look right now, the Mountain Division is spectacular. Even though we're the last place team, I don't think we're, I still think we might be the third or fourth worst team in the division.
Let's talk about this team, though, and what it needs to improve. Like, what it needs to get back to the winning ways. Not
well, for one, the coach and the players need to get, you know, linked up together, you know, and actually have a connection. Because the boxcars can't move without the locomotive.
I mean, Drew, I mean, looking at the team, it's really hard to say, like, what's – like one thing that would fix it. I think you just need to have more fire on the, like, on the bench and on the field, really. I mean, like we've said, like, already there's a lot of talent on this team. I just don't think they're applying as much of it as they possibly can. I don't think they're leaving it all on the field, so to speak. So I think they need to have some people step up. I don't know if that's going to be like Dallin Leavitt in his senior season, or Kent Meyer's senior season, or somebody that we don't even know yet, or Rashad Lewis brings his dad to fire up the team. But
that might work.
I mean, next year, I mean, there just needs to be more desire to win.
I agree. I mean, this team has proven that they can play very good football. The third quarter against Wyoming was pretty solid football from the team. At other points in the season, they have played really well. More bad than good, obviously. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in. And then last year, many of the players that we have on the team this year performed way better than they did this year. I think it is the fire. I don't know if Matt Wells is the guy that's going to be able to bring that back. But if he can, this team could still compete.
I think I just pulled up the schedule for next year just because I'm curious. I think there's a really good chance for us to be bowl eligible if we play decent, just because we're going to have Idaho State, which is probably a win. But then our in-conference schedule, first of all, actually, we also have at Wake Forest, which who knows what Wake Forest will be next year.
Actually doing pretty good this year.
This year, yes, but sometimes they still just plummet right after a good year. But then in conference, we play Hawaii, San Jose State, and UNLV from the West Division. So, I mean, we have a decent schedule next year if the team plays well. I would hope for a bowl game. I'm not sure I can hope for much more than that.
Is that Hawaii at home or away?
Hawaii's at home, okay. And then San Jose State and UNLV are on road. But
so it's the next year after that where we can get an extra game.
Yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of things that I'm not excited about, let's change the focus to something that I am excited about. That's Aggie basketball. I remember, like, for how many years, I grew up in the Valley, and I'd always go to the Aggie football games, and it was almost just like we go to football games because we want to get in shape for basketball season, and football prepares us for basketball, and that's what really matters. And there was a shift there for a couple of years where, I mean, not the basketball was terrible, but everything was all leading up to football. Well, I feel like we're back to at least for this time being, basketball being the big thing, and I couldn't be more excited about this season. I literally, like, I can't think of a time that there was this much preseason hype for an Aggie basketball season since back in the at least 6 or 7 years ago, back in the days when they were often nationally ranked and beating really good teams. And
I think, like, the kind of the comparative with that, I mean, Kobe McEwen, like, obviously he's kind of the main excitement point, I guess, after the first exhibition game. I don't think anybody, like, Utah State's been excited for anybody on the basketball team that much since, like, J.C. Carroll, to be honest. I mean, you look at what he did, that exhibition game.
And even then, when he came in, he didn't have the hype that Kobe McEwen has now.
Well, I mean, like, even like Carroll's like junior, senior season, sure. He was like maybe as hyped as Kobe's freshman season. I mean, you look at the stats from the exhibition game for him. I mean, 7-7. His only miss the entire game was at the free throw line. 19 points. He had that monster dunk that, of course, everybody was stoked about. I mean, this team just, like, regardless, they could go, like, 0-30, and this team just looks exciting and probably will be exciting the entire year.
I think one of the reasons why Kobe is more of a hype than JC or what Moore was coming in is because, you know, Kobe was a top 100.
Well, he's the highest rated recruit we've ever had at Utah State. And, man, he balled out last week. I don't have his stat line pulled up, but he didn't miss a shot. Didn't he have something like, 19 points?
Yeah, it was 7-7, 19 points. He missed one free throw. That was it the entire game.
I get that this is an exhibition. I get it. I get that we're playing a team that is Division III, and it's Southern Virginia University. It seems like you can't go through a conversation hyping up this team without someone bringing up, but they're Division III, so we should have beat them by 100 like Kentucky does. Well, yeah, okay.
We're not Kentucky.
One, we're not Kentucky. Two, I don't care. We weren't going to lose the game, and even if we did, it doesn't matter.
It's not like the players are really hyped up for this game.
We won by 30 while still doing mass substitutions of five at a time and at points having five guys who have never played a second of college basketball in their lives on the court.
That was the exciting part for me. I kind of want to switch from that to those lineups. Because I think the first line we had up there and the second lineup we had there is a really good, I kind of think, example of what the program for Aggie basketball is right now. Because the first team was kind of the more experienced players. But I don't know about you guys, but that second team...
Every returner was in the starting lineup.
Yeah. And then, but the second team I felt was, like, so much more athletic. It looked like so much longer. Like, granted, the first team had Jalen Moore, Shane Rector, and those. But, like, the second team, the athleticism, they were great on defense. They were fun on offense. Like, that kind of just exemplifies to me, like, why people are excited about Aggie basketball, because it's not the same recruits. Like you said, Kobe's a top 100 recruit. Alexis Dargenton looks fun. Clay Stahl was a 3-star recruit, and he looks great even with the gimpy knee. I mean.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm not saying that because we played well against SVU, we're going to go and win the Mountain West Conference just because of what I saw there. I'm saying I saw a lot of really impressive things from a lot of guys. And Kobe being the star of that, which is awesome. After the game, Coach Duryea, I don't know if any of you saw or read his post-game interviews, Coach Duryea was asked, what is the purpose of a scrimmage for your team? He says, the only thing I hope to accomplish. He said, I don't care about the score. The only thing I hope to accomplish is to get all 15 of my guys in there and try out different lineups and see what works. And that's what they did. So it was a successful scrimmage.
It's a good way to tweak lineups, you know, kind of see what who has good chemistry and who doesn't without having it count towards your season endings.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much the only thing I can really get from these scrimmages is, like, kind of on an individual basis with the players, like, what's going to be kind of their game this year. Because, like, you could kind of see in the scrimmage, Barnaba is going to be taking probably a lot of threes in the regular season. He spent a lot of time kind of as a stretch four out there. Kobe's going to be attacking the basket a lot and going to probably get a couple of nice assists. And Stahl's going to get a lot of rebounds. And that's kind of all I really could get from the scrimmage because, I mean, and even then, Southern Virginia is not going to give up any resistance. They're a paper wall, really. So, I mean, we're not going to read too much into this, but we can at least see, okay, these players are as advertised somewhat. They're at least doing what we thought they were going to be doing a little bit more in some cases. Alexis Dargenton, I did not think he was going to look as good as he did, but he looked great.
Yeah, so the Aggies are now going from playing SVU to playing what is going to be one of their toughest games of the season, in my opinion. UC Irvine is a stout team. Now,
Anteaters.
Given they did lose their two guys that just tore us up last year, I'm sure probably a lot of you remember that game. They had that huge guy, Young, who went out and got 20 points. He graduated. I don't remember the name of the other guy that put down a bunch. Oh, I pulled up the box score. D.I.E.
Yeah, he's still there.
He graduated. No.
Mamadou Diaye is a 7'6" junior, I think, this year is what this is saying. Actually, wait, no, that's last year. Stupid Google.
So they don't have the guys that really killed us last year, but if this is any bit of a – I'll just use this as a measuring stick. CBS Sports every year ranks all 351 college basketball teams in the country. Utah State this year was ranked at number 75 out of 351, which I feel like is a pretty fair, pretty respectable rating. UC Irvine, number 74, one spot. So they're ranked higher than us in that. Just to give you an idea of this is a team that is supposed to be pretty well equal to us. Yeah, they're in the Big West, but they're a very good team. And if Utah State can go out and win this on the road, I think that that's going to say a ton about this team. It's not like a should-win, must-win kind of situation. I mean, if we lose, I'm not down in the dumps and thinking that this season is already gone to waste. But this would be an enormous win for the team.
I remember back in the day when Utah State played in the Big West, and they were one of our usually top-tier teams that we were fighting for the Big West regular championship and conference championship.
I remember all those games with Pacific, and I hated Pacific. Yeah, kind of looking at Big West, actually, I finally found this year's preseason polls. They're picked to finish second in the Big West behind Long Beach State, and they have one player that's on the all-conference team, Luke Nelson, who's a guard, a senior. So, I mean, they're not going to be as good as last year, I think, but because they had two, like, 7'6" guys. But they're still going to be a good test this early in the season. And I think, kind of like you're saying, this is a good benchmark. I kind of expect them to come into this and win.
Who?
Utah State. But that's mainly because I want to be optimistic about the team, and I just kind of want them to win. I want a lot of hype. I want the spectrum to be filled, and I think winning this game would go a long way to doing that.
Yep. And I'm sure many people remember this is a team that came to the spectrum and beat us last year. I know that the returning players are going to have that in mind, and they're going to go out and try and get some revenge on them on their home courts, but this should be a good game. I'm excited for it. I'm really, like, all this hype and everything, as much as it's good to see the team in an exhibition, I am just so ready to see them play a real college basketball game that matters. The following week, they've got, and I don't ever remember a time that this has happened besides, like, the Gosner Classic, but the following week they have three home games in the same week. Monday, which is another weird thing that they play a Monday game against NJIT, Wednesday against Bristol.
Another glorified scrimmage.
Is Bristol, like, is that a European team?
I think it's the ESPN team, actually, from Bristol, Connecticut.
Or is it Bristol, Connecticut? Or say right. Maybe it's the team that, you know, practices at the NASCAR race place.
Maybe. And then Idaho State. So we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about NJIT just because that'll happen before we shoot our next podcast. We usually do these on Tuesdays, and that game is on Monday. So we'll be fresh coming off of it next week when we do this. But NJIT, that's not a pushover team either. For those of you that follow college basketball pretty closely, last year NJIT went and had a win against number 17 Michigan in Michigan. I don't know who they've retained, who they've lost. But on that CBS Sports rankings, they're number 141, which, again, we're 75, so that's a game that we should win, especially at home. But it's not a pushover. You know, we're not playing San Jose State or Bristol. NGIT is that's definitely one that we could lose. If the Aggies start out 2-0, I'm going to be incredibly excited about this team. If we start out 2-0, I think this is a team that could very well compete in the Mountain West.
I'm not as worried about NGIT because while they do have that win last year, they won at South Florida, at St. John's were the two that from last year. But then you also look at their...
And last year they beat Michigan.
I think that was the year before.
No, that was last year.
Let me see real quick.
No, but you're right. It was 2 years ago. I'm sorry.
Okay. But there's a lot of players on there.
And then last year, St. John's.
Yeah. St. John's last year, not that great of a win, though. To be honest, St. John's was not that great, especially in the season. But then you look at them in conference with the Atlantic Sun. They also lost to South Carolina, Upstate, Florida Gulf Coast, North Florida, Lipscomb. So it's a good team that has potential to, knock us off. I'm not as scared of them, to be honest. They also lost at Albany, Kent State. I think if we play a good team and play a good game, and especially with it being at the Spectrum, I'm not scared of that, to be honest.
I feel like you're a little too confident about a team that only has four returning starters or four returning players. As optimistic as I am, I'm not as confident.
I know we have only four returning starters, but again, I think we kind of have to also keep in mind, one, that's kind of the new thing with college basketball is not a lot of teams have
more than four returning starters.
Still, you also think about who we're bringing in. We're not bringing in the same cast that we usually bring in at Utah State.
Okay, but there's still new guys, and this is the second game of the season.
Okay, but I'm also thinking you're overstating NGIT because I don't think they're really that great of a team. I mean, yes, they beat a couple of good teams, but just beating a couple of good teams does not make you a great team, especially when you go and lose to Stetson in the first round of your conference tournament.
Utah State Aggies football won a great game last year against Boise State.
Bingo. So, I mean...
Yeah, so they could come and upset us.
They could. I don't see it happening, though. I mean, I'm not scared of this team at all.
Yeah, I'm not predicting a loss or anything. But it would be huge for the Aggies to get off and beat UC Irvine, beat NJIT. Bristol no question, that should be a win. Idaho State, decent team, not great team, decent team. If they could start out 4-0 and then head into the Cancun Challenge, playing Purdue and whoever it is out of Texas Tech and who's the other team there?
Auburn, I think is the other one.
could get things rolling.
Here's I guess my pick for the out of conference schedule. I think we've got 11 games before conference play really sets in. I think we start conference play 9-2. I think we win one game out of Purdue, Texas Tech, or Auburn, and then BYU. Other than that, I think we actually do really well in out of conference play.
You're definitely more confident than I am.
Then we start.
I'm optimistic, but not.
Then we start conference play, and it's a little different because then we there's a couple better teams than New Orleans in the Mountain West. But
well, not only that, those when we start in conference there, it's also when school hasn't started yet, so there's not as much students here to help the Spectrum get going.
Yep. So moving on from Aggie basketball, this there's plenty of hype. I'm excited. I just can't wait to see them finally show what they've got and have it actually matter, and then have everything be recorded and not have everyone just say, "Oh, well, it was a Division III team, so nothing matters, and we're actually terrible."
Oh, just a Big West team, so nothing matters.
A very good one. Going on to the Aggie calendar, like we do at the end of every show, there's not a ton at home this week. Really. Just about nothing at home this week.
I mean, we've already talked about men's basketball and football, so
And those are on the road.
Yeah.
Well, the football team's at home. Volleyball, they just barely had probably their best game of the season and their worst game of the season against the best and the worst teams in the Mountain West, so somewhat expected. They're sitting pretty solid right in the middle of the Mountain West right now, and they're on the road for a three-game road stand right now. So You know, good luck to them, but they don't have anything at home until next weekend. There is, and I think that this is kind of interesting, a home regional cross-country tournament. So the Mountain West, I don't think it's the Mountain West.
It's above
the Mountain. So the Mountain Region.
No, it's
the NCAA Mountain Regional Championships.
Yeah, so the Mountain Region is having their championship in Logan.
It's like in the track and field, you'll have the conference championships, then regional championships, and the winners of that go to the national championships.
Yeah. Sure. So, I mean, good luck to them. That's Friday morning at 11. I don't know what the spectator situation is there. I mean,
it's just at the track and field just north of Maverick Stadium. So if you've ever gone to a football game,
it's actually more closer to where the they play the soccer because there's a
right in that complex there.
Cross-country course they have.
Oh, yeah, it's
cross-country.
Track and field would be up north. Okay. My bad. Listen to Trevor.
It's okay.
So, anyway, that's Friday morning. The only other thing is that women's basketball is actually here on Friday at noon. I don't know why they play their first game Saturday or Sunday at 2 o'clock and their second game Friday at noon.
It's a really weird schedule.
Maybe they're trying to have the lowest attendance in all of college basketball.
That's not going to happen. Side note, studying a little bit for women's basketball opponents in Mountain West, Air Force last year had games where they seriously only had 96 people at the game. Oh, or at least in 300.
Less.
The ones that were at least reported from last year were at 300 for most of them. Air Force seriously had some that were just double digits.
Anyway, so they're at home Friday at noon. They're playing Westminster, so an in-state rivalry. Ooh, that'll be good. I might be able to check that out if I get off work early. And that's about it we got this week. And then football on
women's
Saturday,
basketball second game. They're here at home again, Montana State. It looks like it's right after the men's basketball game on Monday night, according to the calendar.
Hmm. Yeah. Doubleheader.
Last year, women's basketball for Utah State averaged 6:15 per game, and Air Force averaged 3:14 per game. This is right for the NCAA site.
According to the...
Like we said with football, that counts the players, the staff, the janitors, and everybody there. So even with that, Air Force still had some games that were 90. So
anyways,
we're at least a little bit better than that. But
I think that wraps up everything we have today. Hopefully next week we'll have a little bit more of a positive bit to talk about when it comes to football. I kind of miss having shows where we can praise the team. It's been a little bit, so I'm really hoping for that.
Was the last time of that a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, we weren't able to do one after the Fresno game, I think. So it's probably been since Arkansas State.
Yeah, and they're tied for the lead in the Sun Belt right now.
Anyways,
that win keeps looking better and better.
Just a plug, if you're looking for a pregame show to listen to before the football game, and we may end up be doing these for the basketball games as well, but usually an hour and a half before kickoff, you can tune into Aggie Radio 92.3 and hear
KBLULP.
Our beautiful voices talking Aggie football before the games. Again, thank you for listening. This has been Section 119. Find us on Twitter at 119 Sports.
Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Adios.